morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell.
Welcome back to the Up North Podcast. We're going to visit now with my friend Denise Gomer Hutchison. Denise is the Northeast Regional Organizer for the Wisconsin Public Education Network, which is a nonpartisan alliance of a whole bunch of people that are committed to ensuring that public schools have the resources and support they need so every child at every public school has equal access and opportunity to learn and succeed in the classroom and beyond. She has a ginormous background in grassroots organizing. She's organized referenda in the school district in Green Bay and leads referendum initiatives through a group called Champions of the Green Bay Schools. And she's also done, just to squeeze everything in, she's been part of the Wisconsin Women's Council, the League of Women Voters, and the Milwaukee Women's Fund. I'm out of breath here. Denise,
I know.
Welcome.
I'm really 93 years old, so.
Staying active in the community can age one. Now, Denise is joining us today primarily to talk about where things stand with schools, the funds they're getting from COVID relief and some other sources. But first, since it's in her corner of the state, we do have to talk just briefly and generally about Keele. It's a little community that's been through a lot, some of it of its own making. It started when, allegedly, some students wouldn't use the right pronoun for another student. The school district had to look into it. That's the rule. Complaint's been filed. But as soon as the kids' parents and a right-wing legal group, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, got involved, well, off to the races we go, to right-wing cable TV, and then the bomb threats came in, the school year's cut short, the Memorial Day parade is canceled. Eventually, the school board, which had been taken over in April's elections by conservatives, dropped the investigation. So if there was any bullying, there won't be any consequences for it. Denise, school board members are supposed to be advocates for all students, especially those who are marginalized or at risk. But between this action and some other conservative-led school boards in the state, What in your mind is this doing to educators and administrators who expect the school board to have their backs? And is this all, while serious, taking time away from some of the issues that your network would also knows it needs to be working on?
You know, it's a really sad statement that every child who walks through the door of a public school can't feel safe and honored and be provided an environment to be successful in their learning. And we have some real challenges right now, and we have to really address them. And what does that look like? What does it mean? Every child deserves a safe, secure, and great place to learn and grow and become who they are meant to be. And so, our school boards have a need to remember who are they representing. They're representing every single child that walks through the door of that school building, not fringe groups, not special interest groups, but every single child who walks through that school building. And I think that's where our school boards have to get back to, is how do we advocate for every single child that walks through the doors of our buildings? And how do we make it a good place, a safe place, and a wonderful place for educators to educate our children?
And I totally want to move on to the real issues with education, but I have to point out, and it's probably been talked about ad nauseum in the last week, but I've been trying to sell beer, so I haven't talked about it enough. But it seems like these bomb threats came as a direct result of an issue that was very small being politicized by this law firm, this conservative law firm, Will, Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty. They went and wrote a Washington Post op-ed, or they were referenced in a Washington Post op-ed, and they made it to the Laura Ingraham show. And this issue was blown up out of proportion, caught, and somebody that was very, probably listens to AM conservative talk radio like at length every day, went off his rocker and did this. Do you have any thoughts on you know, the politicization of school boards in Wisconsin right now seems at its highest, and it scares me a little bit.
We've seen some pretty significant changes. You know, it used to be a challenge to get somebody to run for school board. You know, it would be somebody got in on the school board and they were there forever. What we can't have happen is fringe groups impact high quality public education. And so it needs to be focused on what is good for that community and what's good for the children in that community and the families and the parents and everybody involved in that community. So,
you know, back in the olden days, in 2017, our legislature, before all of this craziness, it's hard to remember, but our legislature commissioned, it put together a blue ribbon commission that was released in 2019. This was a bipartisan commission that was comprised of legislators and education leaders throughout the state. They had 8 public hearings across the state. There was a bunch of data that was provided, lots of information, and they came up with some really fantastic recommendations. And then what happened with all of that information?
You know, this was an amazing experience. I had the honor of testifying at the one that was in Green Bay. And we even had a huge group of business leaders come out and say, we have great public schools in our community. We need to fund them. We need to take care of them. We need well-educated people to come to work for us. This is an economic win for us to take care of high-quality public education. In the Blue Ribbon Commission, they suggested a minimum of 60% funding for special education. They requested, continued increases in public funding. They suggested increase in costs and services for ELL. We are like third from the bottom in the United States in funding for English language learners. And yet some of our major workforces are people who English is not their first language. So, you know, I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. And we have to do something about implementing what came out of that Blue Ribbon Commission. It was really good stuff. It was put together by a nonpartisan group, representation from everybody. It was led by Luther Olson and Joel Kitchens, representative from Assembly District 1, and Luther is now left from the Senate. But they had some real opportunities, and they have not implemented those opportunities.
Okay, so Denise, let's go move on to the confusion about COVID aid. So on one hand, it seems like school districts got a lot of federal funds and they have until 2024 to spend it all. So can you tell us about like some of the good things and maybe some of the bad stuff about this COVID aid? Like how have Wisconsin schools, especially small and rural ones up north, been helped? And what are the pitfalls in terms of not being able to use the funds properly or Republican legislators using it as a reason to squeeze local budgets harder?
Boy, Kurt, that's a lot of bundled into one question. So I'm going to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah.
COVID relief has a lot of strings attached to it. Probably the first and most important one to know is that the money has to be spent and upfront by the districts, and then it's reimbursed for actual costs. So that's an important thing to know, you know. So you can't, you know, some of these school districts who are on amazingly tight budgets already can't go out and just say, okay, we're going to put brand new bubblers and water fountains in our school buildings so that we can safely let kids drink from water fountains to the tune of X thousands and thousands of dollars. You know, we're going to go in and put in new heating and air conditioning systems that have air purification systems in them. We're going to change out bathrooms so that we have soap dispensers that can be adequately used and take away paper towels and do air dryers. You know, we are going to, you know, some, have you seen some of our school buildings around the state of Wisconsin? You know,
oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, so did Woodrow Wilson saw some of our school buildings. That's all there. So you're saying that, again, these are things that districts could do. There's this perception that, you know, a truck full of gold bars with Joe Biden's, you know, face on the side. I mean, that's the way right wing radio makes it sound like, is pulling up to every school with these bags of cash. And you're saying that all of these projects are things they could do, but they got to find the money up front.
Right.
Well, that's
impossible.
They
don't have the money.
Right.
Especially for the smaller districts.
Right. Now, I think DPI has now set up like they've put some processes in place where I don't know the whole policy on that, but I think they're working with that. But it is not like here's, you know, $887 million, go spend it however you want to. Plus, they have to use it. You know, like every schoolroom in the Green Bay School District had to have hand sanitization systems put in. Every, you know, when you're serving 22,000 kids in 43 different buildings, that's a lot of work to put that all in. And, you know, and they have to create safe environments for those children. New Chromebooks.
So the alternative part of that question that I ask is,
yes.
Okay. So if, you know, if I want to be political and I want to kind of say that Biden is causing inflation because he's giving away all this money to the schools, then I'm going to say, I'm going to be a good fiscal conservative and rein in the budgets that we already have, maybe for education or, you know, for city government or potentially is, do you see this happening? You see pressure to shrink budgets because the federal government's giving COVID aid, which you just told us can't be spent unless you put up the money up front. Are you seeing that or no?
And not only up front, but it has to be specifically for COVID mitigation services. You know, one of the things was mental health services. So I'm going to back up, but Kurt, I remember your question, so I'll come back to it. One of it was mental health services. If you can't find mental health providers to provide those services, you can't spend that money, you know, for that. So that's a huge piece of it, you know, and also, it has to be, what do you do with that mental health program that you put in place, but the money's gone in 2024. So do you just say, bye, mental health provider? Yeah, all the kids' mental health issues are now taken care of. Yeah, right. Not happening. So, you know,
additional funding. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make this political because we're nonpartisan. We want to work with everybody to make our public schools the greatest places they can be. But there's some real misrepresented situations out there that we need to figure out. And now I want to go back to your question of, do we see them crunching the funds? Yeah. I mean, did you see this last budget? Did you see that public schools got a $0 increase for the next 2 years?
Oh, no, that's not what I heard. I heard it was a record amount that got put in. Where are they wrong?
Well, Pat, when you give a record amount, but you don't increase the 2/3 funding for public education, they can't use that money. So then it's a tax cut to taxpayers, but then school districts have to go to referenda. And so you're asking them to now pay through their taxes to fund public schools.
It's such a scheme. It's almost diabolical that school districts were essentially used as the pass-through, you know, to give a property tax cut. And you can tell people that you gave schools record amounts, but now the school district has actually got to come for the money through local property taxes. And people go, oh, wait, where's all that money you got that you didn't get?
And they're having to levy up for vouchers.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. And I've got some strong feelings about that. I mean, they've been around for, you know, a generation now. I think they're basically destroying public education. They defund our neighborhood schools. I know I'm supposed to say conservatives prefer free market competition, blah, blah, blah. No, no, we've seen the results. They are not that much better. And in some cases, really not that much better than public schools. Private vouchers aren't the cure-all that they were meant to be. All they're doing is siphoning money off public schools, said Pat Kreitlow. Now, Denise, where is your view of where we are with voucher schools? And even if Democrats regain control of the legislature or other public education advocates, I mean, is it horse out of the barn?
We are seeing people having a desire to privatize public education.
Right.
And we can't let that happen. And, you know, we have school districts in the state of Wisconsin that have about $9,300 to $9,500 per child to spend. And we have school districts in Wisconsin that have $14,900 per child to spend. That's a lot of inequity in public schools.
Without a doubt.
When you have school districts up north that are sharing the school nurses between school districts, you know, and you have them sharing other services.
Right. Denise, I got a commercial break. I got to hit, but your point's very well made. Thank you so much. And we're going to talk about some other areas we didn't get to next time around. Thanks so much again. We'll be back in a moment. You're up north.